All right, My Moss Project, welcome back to another episode of The After Show. This week, we've got a few listener questions. We've got some stuff around building muscle, the vegan diet, which I haven't done before, and then just our dream dream interviews, like a bit of a list, bucket list sort of stuff there. So that's pretty cool. And then we're going to get into Generation Iron 3, which is we've reviewed Generation Iron 1 and 2, and now we're going to get into Number 3, which is the latest film from, is it just Generation Iron Films?
Generation Iron Original Films.
Yeah. So, they're basically sort of pioneering the documentary side of the fitness industry in terms of like bodybuilding. So, that's super cool. The first two were really good. And then we'll get into the third one. So, first things first, how is your training going? It's gone absolutely terrible, right?
Yeah, horrific. Well, it was going quite well. I was training very hard, but I think what pushed me over the edge was I was doing the training for the air bike goal, and also had the swim run coming up. So, on the rest days of the air bike,
That's why.
I was doing like 1-2 hour sessions running and swimming.
Tell people what the swim run is.
Saturday, it's a very cool event. Somewhere from like Finland where they like run much more hardcore, but they're like running between islands. So, you run over the island, you swim to the next island. Run over the island, you swim to the next island. And because it's quite dangerous, you would do it in pairs. And they've basically taken that and they started an Australian one. So, it's like up and down the coast. So, you're basically like running all the way down the coast. You stretch like 18 kilometers, but you're running and then you like will swim the beach.
Yeah. You're going to have to name this coast and beach for the people
around the pier. So if you live in Sydney, it's in the eastern suburbs. So, you go from Rose Bay all the way up to basically the end at the lighthouse. So, the heads basically where you can kind of enter. Incredible view. But you can basically, you're facing North Head, and it's where you basically enter to come into Sydney.
Yeah.
On the old school when the boats would come in. So you'll run around rocks, all that sort of stuff, swim. So, I was doing that on the rest days, like 1-2 hour sessions to get ready for it. It takes around 2.5-3 hours, depending on how slow I swim. And
somewhere between very and slow.
Yeah. Somewhere between breaststroke and slow. And getting ready for that has pushed me slightly over the edge. I got sick over the weekend, but it was probably ideal because it made me take like 3.5 days off, which has probably been the best thing.
Are you back into it now?
Yes, I started training today again.
Yeah, okay.
But it's kind of like a forced taper because I'm doing the competition this weekend. But I feel like it's one of those things where you get sick and you rest, but you probably needed the rest anyway, so it's worked out.
Have you got your times from last year? Because same exact distance every year, right?
Exactly the same. It took me 2 hours and 53 minutes.
Okay.
I definitely am better prepared this time.
Yeah.
I'm probably putting like 5 weeks of training for it.
What are you hoping to get?
Like around 2 hours 35.
So, you're going to cut like 25 minutes off?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really struggled last year.
Yeah.
I had done nothing over like 40 minutes.
Mm.
And after, like, it really slowed down. Like, I probably did the first half, you know, on track for like maybe 2 hours 40 and then hadn't really run that far. Definitely hadn't swum that far.
Yeah.
And I was absolutely dying. like I was cramping and I was less than a third of the way through the race.
Oh, no.
So, the back half really slowed down. So, I started putting like way more preparation. And little things like entering the water, because it's like 14 swims, I think, 14 runs.
Yep.
So, those things make a big difference. So, just knowing the course better.
And like how to run in water, how to dive and come up, dive and come up.
Makes a big difference. Yeah. And even just knowing like, you know, when you're swimming and these sort of events.
But you did surf lifesaving, right?
Yeah, I did a surf lifesaving.
You didn't learn
those. For a long time ago. I did, but you know, it's also quite different because a lot of it's not at the beach. So, it'll be like
surf lifesaving.
So, surf lifesaving is all at the beach.
Yeah.
This event, because there's no waves and stuff, right? Okay. So, it's in the harbour.
Oh, you're swimming in the harbour?
Yeah.
Oh.
No waves. You're on the harbour side.
Right,
so,
right.
It'll be like around shark nets, off piers.
Right.
Like heaps of oysters about and stuff like that. So, it's not much of like running into the surf.
Right.
And, you know, like big parts of it is just like knowing when you can put your feet on the ground.
Yeah.
Like often you're looking down, you're like, oh, I could definitely walk here. Go to like stand and then you're like drowning. Come back up.
Yeah.
And
What's the general rule?
Well, the general rule when you're coming to sand is like when you think your fingertips are about to touch the sand, you can put your feet on the ground.
Right.
But you've got to work out here, like, am I just touching seaweed, which is like overgrown and is actually like way, way above the ground?
Right, right.
Or is this like a rock shelf and then it just goes super deep again?
Right.
Which probably only really comes with knowing the course.
Yeah. Yeah, cool. Well, it'd be good. It's a sold out event every year, right?
Yeah, it's like it's third year. First year sold out in like 2 weeks. This year sold out in like 3 minutes.
What, how many competitors? 6,000?
I think they're letting, no, it's small.
Oh,
I think they're only letting like 240 competitors.
Oh, is that it?
Because they don't close off the roads and stuff like that. So, they just can't handle that many people.
Right, right.
So, you'll get like, I think it's like 70 men, 70 women, 70 mixed. And basically, it's you and your partner, and you aren't allowed to get more than like 3 meters separated from your partner.
Yes.
Something like that for the whole race.
Who's your partner?
Courtney. So,
one of our coaches.
Yeah. Boy and girl. She's...
Does it have to be male-female?
No. So, it's male-male, female-female, male-female. But females are so good at endurance that it's not like a weaker partner or anything, right? Like,
Yeah.
Females crush it. And there's generally like a world triathlete champion that come and do really well. And you obviously keep your shoes on. So, you're swimming with your shoes, which is like an added challenge.
Because of the oysters and stuff as well, right?
Yeah. You got to have your shoes on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're going through all terrain. But it's a sick event.
How's Courtney feel about the shoes on?
She's really pushing her strikes to the...
She's doing it in strikes.
Doing it in strikes.
Wow.
Which is pushing the strikes. Basically, it's one of those races where you pick a pair of shoes that is like brand new, and by the time you finish the race, you put them in the bin.
Yeah.
Because you have
savage... That's like them. Tough mudder.
Yeah. Savage them.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty good. Well, I'll be waiting around for the result. Yeah. I won't be watching. Yeah. My training is just a lot of eating and just trying to be strong in the power clean. You know, I've got some weird thing that happens when I just do too much pulling. Is like, I think there's got to be something with how I sit or my hips or something that's slightly off. But my right hamstring just becomes so tight, like ridiculously tight, to the point where I almost can't like bend over without it pulling. Yeah, it's super weird. I don't know. I haven't, because I didn't train legs super hard in the last cycle. I just sort of maintaining them. Now that I'm back into like heavy leg training and a bit more volume, there's something sus going on. I don't know what it is, because it's not that much volume. It's
just push through it, bro.
Yeah, but this right hamstring feels like, it just feels like every day I've just done heaps of like single leg deadlifts on my right hand side. Like it's got DOMS and it feels shorter than my left, but I'm not doing any single leg, and it's weird. So if anyone wants to come check it out,
what's your strategy for the power clean? Are you gonna go sumo receiving position, like feet wider than the edges of the barbell, or are you gonna do a proper power clean?
I'm trying to go proper. Yeah. I'm trying to make it nice.
Please do it.
I'm trying to make it nice. Yeah. Well, I think at 160 kilos, the risk at poor form is so high. Like I don't want to blow my knee out.
Yeah.
Remember when Miranda Aldroyd blew a knee out at the CrossFit Games power cleaning?
Her feet actually went onto the other person's platform to the right of her.
Yeah. And it like
between
slid.
Platforms.
Yeah. Like I just, that for me is not worth it under any circumstance. Yeah. Like to blow my knee out under that, like.
And it looks terrible. So
it's just
a real lose-lose.
It's just not worth it at all. I just have to, my training right now is just finding any position I feel like I'm weak in the power clean and just training that with accessory. But then just trying to keep my form really sharp and just moving really, really smooth. I'm just trying to keep those same principles that I had for the bench, which was no missed reps, sub-maximal weights, and just moving as best as possible. I know it's a slightly different energy system, like speed strength versus that slow strength, but I think the same principles apply. It's the same body, right? So, hopefully it does pretty well. So, we'll see how it plays out. Just trying to just shovel down lots of food. The Easter break, I reckon
it's a good opportunity.
Yeah, well, when I arrived at my parents'
place... It's designed for overeating.
Oh, yeah. No, it's great. All my training goals are designed for overeating. And then, so... that's how I do it. That's the sub goal. It just keeps giving me an excuse to just not look after my portions.
And then when you feel like you're mentally weak, we throw in extra challenges, such as the 10,000 calorie challenge.
Yeah.
Just to keep you sharp.
Just to keep me on track. Yeah, so at Easter, like, I reckon I probably had... I was trying to add it up in my head on the way home. But I had close to 50 pieces of chocolate of all different sizes. But I reckon I ate, like, 160 grams of carbs in chocolate.
Man, you eat so much chocolate. Because, you know, even here at the Commons, like, our studio, they were just, like, leaving chocolates everywhere.
Oh, everywhere.
Everywhere.
I had, like, 10 of them.
You just non-stop eating them. In every store... And then the worst bit is, you're like, at the end of Easter, you're like, I think I've maybe eaten too much. And then it's all on sale. So, every fucking checkout you go, they're like, they're pushing those fucking Easter eggs 95%
lint.
Off.
Lint's so good as well.
It's delicious.
Oh. Although, the lint, I find they wrap them really well, which makes it more of an obstacle to eat it. And it slows you down in the process. I'm like, this is a good strategy. If I just pick lint every time, it's going to slow.
Like the foil wrappings and stuff.
Yeah. But the reality is, you still eat it all. It just takes longer. So, you just lose time, but you still have the same calories. But look, anyway. Delicious. All right, let's get into the listener questions. So, first listener question of the week comes from You're Kidding Me, You're Quitting Me. Who's on your interview wish list? Ben Bergeron, Arnold, Ido Portal, ? All pretty good guess that, yeah, I would say would be, wish list is hard. Like, cause wish list, I feel, falls into the category of like, there's no way right now that we could get them on. Like, it would be very, very difficult. Like, getting Arnold Schwarzenegger on the podcast, yeah, we don't really have a contact for that.
I don't put loads of thought into people that I know I'm not going to get on.
That's
like
why
Elon. So yeah, it's hard to grasp them. Yeah. But I think what's probably more interesting is people like I really would like to get on. So I'm just getting through my list here of people I've been trying to get on and haven't. Man, I really want to get Mark and Chris Bell on.
Yeah, I was going to say Mark Bell. Yeah.
I reckon both of them are actually super duper interesting.
Mm.
So that'd be really, really good. Always wanted to get Chad Wesley Smith.
Yeah.
Fucking went to his gym. I don't know what else we can do.
Saw him.
We did. Yeah. Saw him there. But he's really good. And I really would like to get Joe DeFranco on.
Yep.
On this thing. Same thing. Fucking spent a fortune getting to his gym. He ignored me. but I really think we can hopefully get him on for this one. Just because I followed him for so long.
Yeah.
So it's more of a personal thing.
Yeah. Oh, for me, one of the ones that I'd really like to get on, I don't know how it's going to happen, but Bedros Koulian, who is owner of Fit Body Bootcamp, has like 900 franchise gyms or whatever. Very successful business person, but also a guy that's got a really cool story, like immigrant mentality is his big thing. He wrote a book called Man Up. I haven't actually read the book, but he is just I like that he stays in really good shape than himself. So he's got his own gym. I just like to hear his whole approach to business and his own just personal health and fitness journey as well, which he shares sometimes. So he would be a super cool person to have on. I've really enjoyed, like, because I listen to so many podcasts as well, getting other podcasters on is, even though they're maybe not the most, you know, A-list, B-list famous celebrity, like an Arnold Schwarzenegger, obviously a huge personality, but, you know, I would kind of know what to expect from the interview. It's more like the fanboy moment of like, oh my God, we have Arnold on our podcast. And yeah, of course you're going to get stuff out of it. But I do generally know what we're going to talk about because you can only really ask them questions about stuff you already know about them, right? And he's put a lot of himself out there. So
it's like 5 books.
Yeah. So I think getting other podcasters on, people like Aubrey Marcus, like would be super cool because podcasters are just, They're good at podcasting, obviously, right? So they do it for a living. So they know that they're really engaged in the conversation. They have a really unique ability to kind of share what's on their mind and articulate themselves, and it just makes for a better conversation. So that would be up there as well.
So also, I noticed some of those people that are often people you're like, man, got to get this guy on. When they come on podcasts or do interviews, they just say exactly what they were always going to say, and the podcaster just like make sure the microphones are working. You know, like Greg Glassman, something like that. People always like, oh, he's getting on. He always has the same thing. Like, he just says his own, not a bad thing, but he just generally goes on
like his sound bites.
Agenda.
Yeah.
And if they ask a question, you can always just answer what you want to say. But there's a lot of famous people, I think, like that. It's even like Tony Robbins. Like, he goes on, he just says his thing. And like, the question could be fucking have been any question. I feel like he would have got the answer that he would wanted to tell that day. I think, but some of those super famous people, that's just what you get with them.
Yeah. A few years ago, I would have said Tim Ferriss. Getting him on. I recently just fallen out of it's not that I dislike his content anymore. I just don't listen to him as much anymore. But when I consumed a lot of his content, I would have, really liked to have get him on. I still would. But again, he'd be super difficult to get on.
Yeah.
But he's got a cool story.
Yeah, he's got a really good one.
Yeah.
And a real fitness element to it, but with a whole lot more.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone who's kind of really experimented with their health and and fitness and made an impact in the industry in a broad sense, even though they might not be the most well-known, I think always has a cool story that would be pretty cool to chase after. Like, even the kid that started Gymshark, I think would be pretty cool, like, podcast to get on. He's in the UK, though, so it's obviously different, but...
We need an interpreter and stuff, but...
Who knows what the fuck they're saying over there. Those are some of the people on the list. We're going to release the guest list soon when it's finalized. How many people will be locked in at the moment? Maybe, like,
Probably, like, six.
Six people?
Yeah.
And look, we're not going for like 50 people. You know, we can probably only fit in 12, 13 people max, like one, maybe two a day, just depending on the travel
schedule. We found last time was that, you know, we ended up with a lot of double episodes, 2 hours plus.
Yeah.
So if you start getting up to like 20 episodes, that's like, man, it's like a year's fucking Monday shows.
And it's like the podcast fatigue as well. if you do too many shows in a short period of time, like, I feel like the same questions, the same ideas, the quality does diminish a little bit.
Yeah.
Because you're kind of just spouting the questions that you're interested in at the time, right? We'll do some research on the guests, obviously, and they've got some set questions about them that are timeless answers. But there are sort of current events that are moving around that do enter into the conversation. Yeah. And if you're just doing, you know, 30 conversations in a short time period, there's not a lot of new ideas being circled around, not a lot of new current events. And that's one thing that we noticed last time, right, is that we started to feel like we're having a lot of the same conversations on our end with the guests every time.
Yeah, for sure.
And then, yeah, just generally fatigued. Like, they're so focus-intensive podcasts. You do come out of them quite fatigued. So, because you want to, like, deliver your best questions and you want to listen and, right, pay attention, your brain is working overdrive.
Mm.
If you do too many of them in a short period of time, like, I feel like I'm disengaged and my quality is diminishing as well. So, we have to be really tactful in who we get on. So, that's probably a big part of it as well. Excited though. And the last thing I'll add to that is when we're there, even though we're not going to get heaps of guests, what is such an enjoyable thing for us is we get an opportunity in person to be with these guests. And it's not just the stuff that we do on the show. It's the stuff that we get to do outside of the show, whether it's a training session or we get to sit down and talk about some future projects or whatever they're up to, or maybe some off-air stuff. Like, that's really enjoyable. And if we've got too many things booked in, if we're rushing around too much, we don't get to do any of that. I remember last time we went out there, did a show, and it was like, we got to get to the next show.
It was like, you know, we visited Andy Galvin, which is sick, and it's so cool to see, like, you got a scientist and he knows all about nutrition, but it's extra cool to be in his house and see what is in his cupboard.
Mm.
And I remember just being like, oh, like, why are you eating this thing in the cupboard? And like, those are the priceless bits. And yeah, you got to have the time to, you know, have dinner with them and get that opportunity.
Yeah, like, his wife invited... Oh, we had dinner made for us. We didn't get to stay and eat it because we're just rushing around so much.
Yeah.
So, we didn't want to miss out on that this time. So, we are being very careful with how we set up our schedule. Try not to miss any flights as well.
Mm.
I'm going to make it my official duty to keep you on time on the trip, just so you know. Okay. Next question is from Meti Vidi. Metivity. Thoughts on the vegan diet? This is really interesting, actually. This came up at a conversation with one of my coaches at a cafe yesterday. Well,
it's massive in Australia at the moment, if you're listening from the States, because they've had, I guess, like, not riots, but demonstrations.
Did they?
In Melbourne. It was, like, really, really big news.
Over the weekend?
Last week.
Okay.
Yeah, last week. So, it was like, I don't know how you call it. Yeah, demonstrations, like, parades in the street or whatever, like, talking about, yeah, trying to get people to go vegan and treatment of animals and all that sort of stuff. So, everybody has been talking about it.
From an ethical perspective, right?
Yeah, everything.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they're just like the vegan army. Yeah. Out. But I know it is around the world and it's a massive thing. And more I find I get clients coming to the gym and the first thing that's not negotiable is like, yeah, some sort of vegan diet or something like that. And they're looking for guidance on how to stay fit with it.
Yeah. Actually, one person it would be cool to get on is the guy who has... He calls himself Plant Proof. He's an Aussie guy.
Mm.
And I was talking to my coach, Marco, and his girlfriend is... she's vegan. And she, like, was friends with someone that knew him. And he wasn't a lifetime vegan. He, like, went vegan, like, maybe 5 years ago, changed his life massively, and then he started a full empire business out of it, right? So, he's got a popular podcast, a plant podcast or whatever. Mm. And... it'll be interesting to get him on because, you know, he wasn't always a vegan. Like, he had to make his own choice later in life about it, which I think is always an interesting decision. Like, I'm not going to rule it out. At some point, I might try vegan or whatever, you know, just because some turn of event might happen or whatever. And then it's just like, all right, well, I may as well try it. I just can't imagine doing it for a long period of time just because of how convenient it is to be able to just eat whatever you want, right? And then making my life less convenient, I know is like a huge... misalignment of my values, and it'd just be more trouble than it's worth. But trying it, like going, it's like something Raf and I might do in the future is like go 30 days keto, go 30 days vegan, right? And try these things just to kind of...
Man, that's even a thing now I've noticed is people that are...
Try it for 30 days.
Nah, sorry. Vegan and keto at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Which must be very challenging.
Well, because
it is a thing.
Yeah, because keto is
just food, high fat, is right?
Food quantity.
Keto vegan, is basically macros.
Yeah.
It's a macro breakdown, and vegan is just... leaving out certain food groups. There's no real reason why you can't.
So, they can work
It's
together.
Just challenging.
Yeah.
Because vegetables are generally not super high fat.
It'll be a lot of nuts.
A lot of nuts, probably a lot of avocados.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is an interesting one. The only thing I think that can get a bit annoying with, I think, the vegan thing, or is the thing that happens is, like, I notice with a lot of them is they get into it and they get, like, a really big life transformation. And then sometimes they get into, like, debating people, like, is it the best thing? But their whole brand and their whole thing is just around being vegan. So, they're, like, maybe, like, the person you mentioned, like, they're plant-powered this. Or, like, they start a podcast and it's, like, plant-powered project. And, like, I just feel like that, straight away, it just... they're no longer open to it not being the best thing.
Yeah.
Or they're not really open to... they're probably not going to do 30 days carnivore diet as a trial if they're on the plant-powered podcast.
Mm.
So, sometimes I just find with that... I mean, lots of groups, but in particular there, they're like, it's one type of diet, but then when you pigeonhole yourself into it, then those people are like no longer open to changing their mind in any way because they've already pigeonholed their entire brand around it. Whereas like, we're open basically to try anything.
Mm. Yeah, all I want to say is like, you know, people can do whatever they want. That's their decision. I think that you just always want to know what you're getting yourself into and always make sure that you... educated, and that you give other people the choice. You don't want to ever position yourself in a way with when you're trying to influence someone as if they don't know the whole story and they don't have a choice. I watched the movie Concussion last night with Will Smith. Have you seen it?
No.
Yeah, it's about, you know, it's about
the NFL.
Yeah, the guy that discovered... it's less about the NFL. It's more about the guy who discovered CTE and kind of the pressure that he put himself under to do it. But anyway...
and he was vegan.
Yeah. Turns out vegan diet saves everything. But yeah, I guess where I'm going with that is it's just like the whole thing with him was like, look, people will still play football, right?
Mm.
He's like, they just need to know what they're getting themselves into, right? Whereas you only sold one side of the story, right? People are sold one thing from vegan, right? Oh, my mom went vegan and she lost 10 kilos, right? So, it must be the vegan diet. Well, it's not the whole story, right? When you go vegan, you probably cut out a lot of processed foods. You probably bring calories down, eat a lot more vegetables. Initially, you're going to lose a lot of weight if you weren't eating very well, right? Or, you know, you hear about, you know, some, you know, crazy person who had cancer or something crazy, had some disease, and then they went vegan and it got better. But it might not have anything to do with that, right? So, you just need to know the whole story before you're getting into it. And that's anyone who wants to choose any diet, right? Vegan, keto, carnivore, whatever it is. Just do as much research as possible. Know the whole story, but hear it from everyone. Hear it from all sides, right? Don't listen to the vegan podcast. Then listen to the podcast, you know, of Len Norton criticizing vegan diets. So you just have the whole picture, because that's once you're in that world, you just fed all that information, right? Your Facebook feed's about that. Your Instagram feed's about that. The podcast you listen to.
Man dies chewing on steak.
Yeah.
Like, that's just blowing up your feed.
Like, think about all the ways you consume content, right? They're all algorithm-based. Netflix, Instagram. Yeah.
Generally, the only one that's not is podcasts and your TV.
Yeah. No, Netflix.
That's true. But yeah. Sorry, I mean like your old school TV.
Right. Yeah, free to air. And like YouTube, right? They all run off algorithms. So, the second you start entering into the world, that's what you're fed. And so, it's hard for you to get out of it. They're not going to feed you why vegan diets don't work, you know? So, that's sort of our main caution there. Our particular thoughts on it is just like, I've never tried it, so I can't say it. I mean, obviously, eating more vegetables is good. I just know that you need to be really particular on your supplement routine to help fill any deficits that you have. You need to be very organized, right? Because it's like, if you got to eat out, or if you're stuck somewhere and you don't have access to food, you know, you got to adapt, because there's a lot of meat out there and there's a lot of animal products, and you got to know your shit, right? So, you're very, very limited. So, organization is number one. Making sure you have a good supplement lineup, number two. Number three, just educate yourself before you get into it.
Yeah, and I remember hearing Rhonda Patrick talk about this, but there's also just really big genetic differences between people in like absorption rate of different vitamins and how much different people need. So, you know, one person might just thrive off a vegan diet and with the same supplement routine as another person. The other person like seriously struggles and is like ends up in hospital, you know, with an iron deficiency or whatever. So, like there are genetic differences. So, I think when people are just like, oh, it worked for me and like it was perfect, it might be a fact of reality that it's like never going to work for some person, no matter like how on board with the diet you are.
That's a good point.
That's just like a fact of life.
Yeah. It's a really good point. Yeah. I think maybe we should dabble in and give it a trial. Look, but from the ethical standpoint as well, I think you apply the same principles. You know, you hear obviously people don't want to do it for ethical reasons, which is totally legit. I get that. but they also don't realize that how hard it is to avoid animal products in general. You know, they say, oh, vegetables only. A lot of vegetables are grown in dead animals, right? They're grown...
It's either that or fossil fuels.
Yeah.
So, it's either that or terrible for the environment.
Yeah. So, I mean, how can you win, you know? So, anyway, people make an effort. You just lose. Yeah. Yeah. Just whatever helps.
It would be a good trial. I actually would like to trial it because I have heard so many times people just feeling... at least a short-term positive effect from trying it. And if I was to guess, I would probably guess that I err on the side of too much meat just because it's like my favorite food.
Mm.
So, if I was to like guess like what's a diet out there that would probably go better for me, maybe not completely vegan, but at least more towards the vegan side of things than where I am now.
Be hard 30 days, that's for sure. Right. Be hard, yeah. Anyway. All right. So, last question before we get into our Generation Iron 3 review. We've got... One, Borticitum. Why so many difficult names, guys? One, Borticitum says, best advice for ectomorph teenagers, 17 years old, trying to gain strength and muscle.
I was not an ectomorph 17-year-old, so it's going to be more challenging
to give advice. What do you think you were?
Definitely more towards the middle ground of all of them. Probably slightly more towards endomorph. Than ectomorph. Actually, definitely slightly more towards endomorph than ectomorph.
Yeah.
I was, like, fatter as a kid. And if I just, like, didn't really... If I paid no attention to my fitness, I would end up on the fatter side of things.
This is the... If you're watching the YouTube...
See Lockie's before and after from ecto. The one thing I will mention, though, is... I don't know if you noticed, but... Like, if you look at the top bodybuilders, particularly in the documentaries and stuff, definitely some are just, like, always jacked. But they either start as jacked or they start as really skinny. They never generally start as fat. They usually start with those like skinny genetics and then there's like pile on muscle, probably through anabolics as well. But to give this person hope, still could have a career in bodybuilding.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's body dysmorphia, right? Mm. If you get someone who's like really jacked, and I suffer from it as well, like I still look at myself and I'm like, man, you are so skinny. Mm. And it's like, for girls, it shows up as bulimic. Anorexic, sorry. And then for guys, it shows up as like obsessive bodybuilders, right?
It's 10,000 calorie challenge. That's how it fucking ends up. Motherfuckers like you, shoveling food down your face.
Hey, you were there. You were part of it. You're encouraging my eating disorder. Now, it's this psychological framework that you operate by, which is my body is not the way I want it to be, and I'm never happy and I'm never satisfied. And because I've brought so much awareness to it now, it's hard because, you know, a lot of the things that I participate in my life are really good for my body. You know, regular training, you know, performance-focused goals, not obsessing over my body fat or anything like that or restricting myself on any foods. So, I have found a good balance. It's more just like not, I think, appreciating the level that I've taken sort of my body too, and always thinking, oh, there's like another level, there's like a new level. And I always wonder to myself, like, when am I going to get over it? When is it going to stop? You know, because I'm never satisfied. Like, I never thought I'd get to 100 kilos. I stepped on the scale the other day, 100 now. Like, you know, I was trying so hard again and I couldn't get there. And then I just stepped on randomly on that. It's like
it's an Easter 100 effect.
Point, 100.7, probably the Easter effect. Yeah. And I was like, huh, imagine if I start, when I started my journey at, when did I first start lifting weights? 16 years old. And I probably weighed, I was probably about 6 foot at that stage. And I reckon I weighed, just a tad under 70 kilos.
Mm.
Like to put on over 30
kilos. That's in danger of just a windy day.
Yeah. It better not be breezy outside. Yeah. That's why I wore a heavy backpack to keep me anchored to the earth. Like I don't know. I was always super self-conscious. I always got bullied about it. But bullied... Not on like a super hateful level, but just on that subconscious, like, you know, you get called lanky, people poke fun at your clothes not fitting right, you just get embarrassed to like take your shirt off at, you know, swimming carnivals and stuff like that, and you just never feel good about yourself. And subconsciously, when you start in the gym, you're like, I'm gonna show everyone, like, I'm bulk up, you know, I'm gonna change, and then, you know, then who's gonna be laughing? And maybe that's not necessarily like the conscious thought every single day when you wake up. You don't wake up, I'm on a mission to like show these people, but subconsciously it you build the pattern of like get that satisfaction, and you do kind of start for reasons that are not healthy. Like, you don't start it out of like, I want to improve myself. You say, I hate who I am and I want to like change this, right? I want girls to pay more attention to me. I want to be like the biggest guy in the room, that sort of stuff. And on my level, obviously, most people look at me and they don't think that I have that sort of, but then if you look at those bodybuilder guys, like you just mentioned, they're like the most extreme version of that. They have become completely obsessed with who they, like how they look, to the point where it's like, you can look back at them. They are super skinny often. Yeah. And they're just like monsters now, like out of control monsters, like just juiced to the tits. And I think that even though we do talk about it more, there still needs to be more awareness brought to that sort of disorder, I think. It's interesting. Anyway, so for tips, right? You wanted tips. You didn't want the sad life story. You got to eat. That's probably the biggest mistake I made when I was younger. Is like, I was like, cool, what do bodybuilders eat? Chicken, broccoli, brown rice, all that stuff. Obviously, we know now you don't need to single yourself to a couple of food groups. But because I was trying to eat like healthy, like clean, bulking or whatever, I did not eat enough food. Because I was just trying to stick to certain foods. I was trying to get enough protein. I was trying to get enough carb in every meal. I was trying to get veggies in. At the end of the day, sometimes you just got to pick up some milk and just start drinking. You just got to eat donuts, right? You just got to be a little bit savage and not the healthiest when you are that young. Because, you know, if you're an ectomorph, right? If you're skinny, your metabolism is just, it's just a machine. It's just a furnace, right? So, you do need a lot of calories to start putting on weight. That's it from a nutrition perspective. Just eat cereal. Eat lots of fruit, drink milk.
Just keep your mouth generally open during the day and see what falls in.
Absorb air. Yeah, bring snacks with you all the time. Just absolutely pound food. Now, from a training perspective, I reckon you need to start slow. I think that I rushed into too much training and didn't learn like the form and stuff properly and didn't learn how to squat properly, how to deadlift properly from the start. And then just putting on, I think, you're not really building muscle in the right areas. If you're not deadlifting properly, you're just probably like fattening up your erectors, right? Your lower back because you're not setting your back properly and you miss out on a lot of benefit of building your lats, building pecs while you deadlift, building hamstrings, glutes because you're not using any of those muscles to deadlift. You're just ripping it with your back, right? So, that's probably the first thing is like building start really slow. start really slow and just get things right because you'll feel like you want to get to, especially now with Instagram, you feel like you want to get to 4 plates on the bar, right? When you're deadlifting or squatting or whatever it is. But you need to get things perfect. You need to get that form perfect from the start. Because I feel like if you can get the form perfect and then you add the weight on, you're just activating more muscles. Like you're recovering properly. You're getting the better stimulus because you can stack weight on faster and you can do more volume because it's not like pounding on your joints as much. And you're not going to know that when you're 17. That you're lifting with poor form, really, because you're so resilient, right? Your tendons, your tissues. So, do things properly. Get a coach. Get nutrition. Well, you don't really need nutritionists. Get a coach. Yeah, get someone, a PT, just to kind of watch your form so they know you're doing it correctly.
Yeah, and I also think if you're 17, I'm interested to hear what you think, but if you eat a ton, you probably don't need to lift that heavy. Like, if you go in and you know, everything's pretty heavy for you at the start because you're weak. But, you don't need to lift that heavy. You can do mostly bodyweight exercises, like, probably pull-ups, weighted pull-ups, handstand presses, weighted push-ups, all that stuff. And then, like, man, even if it's, like, doing leg extensions, leg curls, and, like, leg press because you just don't really know how to do squats and no one's there to teach you, like, you're still going to gain heaps of muscle. If you're eating heaps of food and you're, like, stimulating your body hard, like, that's probably one thing I look back. Like, you don't have to lift, like, 3RM deadlifts, 3RM squats. Or, like, get pinned and start shouting at your friend to pull the bench press off your neck. Like, it's just those things are actually unnecessary for just gaining muscle at that age. You've got so much testosterone running through your body. Yeah. Like, what difference? Like, I know you're probably not going to listen. Don't even know why you ask. They never listen. But, like, you're just not necessary for weight gain.
I agree. No, I 100% agree. Because I think in the early stages, technique and volume at lighter weights, light to moderate weights, is going to be, like, if you're trying to push failure in the 10 to 15 rep range, I reckon you're going to get more benefit because you get to do more reps, right? So, you get more of an opportunity to work on form. It's lighter, so you can control the weight more. And to be honest, you're just going to set yourself up to have really good muscularity for later when you're going to have a higher strength potential, right? Whereas, you start doing strength training super early, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, your strength potential is lower because you don't have as much muscle tissue, which in the beginning, if that is all you focus on, just building as much muscle as possible, the strength training will be an accelerated curve later because you have so much muscle, extra muscle tissue. So that's going to be, I think, yeah, a really, really essential key to building muscle. Yeah, keeping it lighter. Keeping it lighter.
Doing it well. I remember when I was 17, I used to set the squat rack in my bedroom. I was about 80 kilos at the stage. It's like pretty heavy if you're 17 squatting. And I would just do like as many reps as I could till I failed. Like, and I mean properly failed. So like I could not stand up. The bar was on the racks. Pull the weight off, all the weight off, put it back on the top, like the safety pins. And I would do that for 5 sets.
How many reps were you doing?
Like 8 to 12.
Yeah.
Over and over again. And I actually think that was ideal. Like legs probably grew more than any other muscle for me at that age. And it just wasn't that heavy. It didn't even that heavy. I try and like I always, because back then ATG was like the thing. So you'd squat ass to grass. And that is the ideal way to go about it. You know, don't try and lift too heavy. Just fucking pump the reps, pump the food. And man, you're not going to lift impressive weights probably at that age anyway. So just wait, particularly if you're lanky and you've got long limbs and shit. Just wait till you've got a mad base. You're looking good and then you can lift it heavy.
Yeah. No, 100%. I think you can do more sessions as well on the way.
Way more, yeah.
Yeah, and you've got heaps of time, right? You're 17. You don't have anything going on.
Bro, just do 10 by 10. You can do GVT. Once you actually get a job, you don't really have time for GVT anymore.
Oh, and probably the only last thing I would add to that is that when you're still a teenager and you're developing, you do need more sleep. So, that 8-hour rule, I'd push that out to like 9, 10 hours. Like, when you're young, how much... You sleep all the way to like 10 a.m. Yeah. It's like easy.
Easy.
You do actually need more sleep. They've studied it. So, eat lots and then don't sleep 8 hours. Sleep 10 hours. And if you can't do 10 hours in a row, get like an hour and a half, 2-hour nap in during the day because you're just at that point where you just need that extra sleep. So, that's probably the last thing. So, yeah, that's our advice. Before we, you know, if you actually wanted to do it well, you'd do it with two things, right? You would have true protein, obviously, because it's the cleanest supplements on the market and you don't want to put trash into your body, and you do it with peak chocolate because you need a pre-workout as well before you get into it. So, true protein right now, well, they have the best supplements in the world, but they're trying to get into the sock game. Pretty good socks. I've probably got about 50 pairs of their socks.
Yeah, really good socks.
They look good. They feel good. They're soft. And you can get them, when you spend how much money?
Over $150.
Yeah.
They're free.
Nice.
Which is easy. And then also this week.
It's like one bag of protein.
Yeah. This week, they've got 20% off got the new ZMA flavors coming. So, nice. These new flavors have just landed. You can check them out. It's the same ZMA, but just different fun flavors. Nice. And nighttime is a time you want, like a sweet flavor. So, it's an important choice.
Yeah. Make a part of your evening routine for sure. If you guys use the code MINDMUSCLE10 when you check out, you get 10% off any of the True Protein products. If you haven't moved over to True Protein yet, at least try. Try some of their products because they are the cleanest products on the market, which means that, speaking to what you said earlier, when you have better, higher quality products and foods, you're going to get better absorption, right? You're going to get less stomach pains. There are so many ways out there that people drink them and they always complain. How many people come to our gym, new clients, and they go, oh, you know, I don't really like supplements. Like, I try them, they just give me stomach pains or they get indigestion. Yeah.
That's not meant to happen.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Unless you're lactose intolerant, right? Yeah. But if they're not, if they drink milk and they have, you know, coffee and stuff all the time, shouldn't be the case. Yeah, they just got cheap proteins. Never happened with True. So, True Protein. And then, of course, those supplements are in Peak Chocolate, which is obviously fantastic. Peak is, you know, has the active, has the focus. What can we say about the other one?
It's coming. It's coming in June.
Okay.
Maybe start of July. The
third product by
Peak. Yeah, the nighttime version, which
Peak
is
rest.
Good because it kind of rounds out the, I guess, your whole day.
Yeah.
But we do actually have a special thing for... People keep asking for the display box for their gym because we have, obviously, at our gym, we've got display boxes at our East gyms because they've got the single serves, like a nice display box, sits on the counter at your gym and people for just like a few bucks can get... like a pre-training snack before they start training. So, we put them up for gym owners only. So, if you are a gym owner, just put your contact through the website, ask for it, and we'll set you up. And you can get one of those good-looking... I think they're doing half price for any new gym owner. It's like a 30-centimeter tall display box that looks good on the desk, and people can just grab that before training.
Nice. And when you're on the website, peakchocolate.com.au, use the code MMP10. That's going to get you 10% off any order.
Cool.
Yeah. So, thanks to our sponsors who... always support us and love us. We love you too. So, Generation Iron 3 on Netflix at the moment. Their third film in the Generation Iron series, obviously. This one is more about the overall state of bodybuilding as we know it and kind of how it's developing in India, how it's developing in the Middle East, how people are sort of interpreting bodybuilding from the public's eye as well, you know, how the average person on the street views bodybuilding, and then just the emergence of all these different divisions as well.
Yeah, I think it's particularly looking at like what is the ultimate physique for bodybuilding. So it gets like the public's view, and then it looks at all the different new categories, including the women's categories, and kind of like what's the future of it and everything like that.
It is interesting because so many of the, or so much of the current mainstream fitness audience are absorbing bodybuilding content, right? Yeah. And so it's interesting to kind of see the physiques that are most appealing because, you know, back in the day before Instagram, you know, the idols were Arnold, Dorian Yates, you know, Jay Cutler, Phil Heath, that sort of thing. And guys that, you know, were in the board shorts and stuff, like no one really, like the guys like Steve Cook and stuff who kind of pioneered that sort of era. Greg Plitt, that sort of thing. They were on the covers of Men's Fitness, but they weren't like the idols of the kids in the gym when we started lifting weights. Everyone wanted to be Jay Cutler. You know, and
the open division.
Yeah, but now it's kind of flipped on its head, I feel, whereas guys like Phil Heath and stuff, they're more seen as freaks, and people much want to chase the physiques of guys like Steve Cook and... You know, even, I know he's not a bodybuilder, but like Rich Froning, they want that sort of look, right? They want the athletic, the leaner, not as big sort of look. So, it's been a bit of a shift, and I think that's kind of what they were communicating in this film, is the shift that no one wants to really be Kai Greene anymore. You know, it's more of a freak show. Yeah. Whereas, it's still the same guys, but just a different way of looking at it.
Yeah, it's crazy how quickly it's grown. But then I think from like the authentic bodybuilders, what becomes clear in the movies, like when you really get into bodybuilding as a sport and more as a competitor, like the open is the ultimate.
Yeah.
Like that is where like they are the best at bodybuilding. And that is like, that is the big leagues. And I guess they probably look at the, you know, physique and all that stuff as like guys playing touch rugby as opposed to full contact. Like it's just a low level. But in the public's eye, they might think like, oh, that guy's like done better than the other guy. He looks way better. Like he like stopped at the right point. So it's interesting how there's like that dynamic between like people in the know and people not in the know.
It's interesting. I asked one of our good friends of the show, maybe because this particular subject's like quite touchy, but you know, I was asking him, someone who's been on before who knows a lot about sort of this side of the industry, bodybuilder himself. I was like, you know, what is it that separates a guy that wins the board short division and the open competitor, right? Like they both train fucking hard, right? Both take steroids, and they both do the nutrition thing, right? And one is, you know, one's obviously, they're both jacked. One, you know, you see in the street, and you'd be like, board short guy, still crazy fucking jacked. But you're like, okay, this is just like the biggest guy I've ever seen in the gym. But then you get like Kai Greene, and you're like, that's like from a different planet. And I'm like, what is separating them? Because they've both been training their whole lives, right? They both eat, sleep, and he's like, it's the food. It's the food. A guy like Kai Greene, he doesn't stop at 4,000 calories in a bulk. He bulks at 6,500 calories. Like they, I guess because you don't follow him around for 24 hours, but he's like, they will push themselves from a food, purely from a food perspective, way harder than anyone else. And that is the difference.
Feels like they just kept pushing the envelope, right? They kept pushing like 5% more calories, 5% more calories all the way.
Because even when we spoke to like Meadows, you know, he was like, oh, you know, inject like testosterone or whatever. But he didn't say, oh, you know, the difference between me and the next best guy is like all the steroids he's using. It's like, nah, then there's heaps of people out there that use tons of steroids, but they don't look anything like the dude step on stage. So there is a massive genetic component to it as well, right? How people grow muscle, how quickly they grow it, how they react to steroids, how much muscle they can hold on their joints. So you're looking at the tip of the spear in terms of genetics as well. But those freak guys, like, they take food to the next level. Yeah, they put that food in that the other guys just don't do. And it's not maybe necessarily that they can't. It's like they probably don't want it. They don't want to get that big. They want to eat a lot still, but they don't want to go to that level.
Yeah, it is really interesting. And I think also there is that extra challenge of, like, those guys at an extra big level, like, they have to bring their weaknesses up to a higher point than the other ones, and they have to keep finding ways for their muscles to grow, even when they already are so, so big. So, I think sometimes, you know, you look at the guys and you're like, you know, I want the guy with like a smaller body to teach me how to train. I'm going to like jump on his program, whatever.
Yeah.
But I think when you watch him and you meet a guy like John, you realize like those guys, the guys that push it all the way, they know how to get to every level. And they've actually really found the best ways, like, to gain muscle. Because, like, you know, John came on our show, like, he knows so much about training the back. And if he'd stopped halfway towards how much muscle he's at now, like, more of a physique competitor, he might not have learned, like, the techniques and the little things that just make him even better or give him even more knowledge to share. So,
and you applying those techniques doesn't turn you into a freak.
No, but it's still the best thing.
Yeah, it gives you better back development to the level you want it to.
It's just like literally they're the best tennis players in the world, and best tennis players can still teach beginners.
Yeah.
And they're generally going to know more than the guy that is like a middle-of-the-road tennis player.
Yeah.
Because the game is building muscle.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's super cool. So, look, Generation Iron 3 on Netflix, guys, it's always worth a watch. Raph, what are you giving out of 5, this one? The last one got slam bust, by the way, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, the last one was like kind of all that social media and just wasn't as good for sure.
Yeah.
This one, I would say, it's like not super memorable. So, I don't think I'm going to be going back in like a year time, like, remember the thing about Generation Iron? I feel like it's not that. It's not pumping iron. But actually watching it is super fun and easy. Mm. Like, I didn't want to stop it. Really enjoyable. So, I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5.
Ooh. I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 5 as well. Yeah.
You feel the same?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really well done, really well documented, but again, it's only a one-time watch. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not life-changing. Yeah.
I mean, it's nothing like super special that happens, that has happened in the last year and a half to really capture on film.
Yeah.
So, it's just like an interesting take on it. But I really hope this Generation Iron, like, it just keeps going. Keep hoping they make more movies because there is a lot to uncover in fitness.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening to the After Show this week, and we'll catch you on the next one.